Cirque du Freak by Darren Shan. The Saga of Darren Shan, Book 1. Kindly brought to you by the English teachers and other staff members from Courtfield School for your listening pleasure.
Chapter 31. All sounds faded away as they lowered me back down the dark, dank hall. There was a jolt when the coffin hit bottom, then the rain-like sound of the first handfuls of soil being tossed upon the lid. There was a long silence after that, until the grave diggers began shovelling the earth back into the grave. The first few clods fell like bricks. The heavy, dull thud shook the coffin. As the grave filled and the earth piled between me and the topside world, the sounds of the living grew softer until finally they were only faraway muffles. At the end there were faint pounding noises as they pattered the mound of earth flat. And then complete silence. I lay in the quiet darkness, listening to the earth settle, imagining the sound of worms crawling towards me through the dirt. I thought it would be scary, but it was actually quite peaceful. I felt safe down here, protected from the world. I spent time thinking about the last few weeks, the flyer for the freak show, the strange force that had made me close my eyes and reach blindly for the ticket, my first glimpse of the dark theatre, the cool balcony where I watched Steve talking with Mr. Crepsley. There were so many vital moments. If I'd missed the ticket, I wouldn't be here. If I hadn't gone to the show, I wouldn't be here. If I hadn't stuck around to see what Steve was up to, I wouldn't be here. If I hadn't stolen Madame Octa, I wouldn't be here. If I'd said no to Mr. Crepsley's offer, I wouldn't be here. A world of ifs, but it made no difference. What was done was done. If I could go back in time. But I couldn't. The past was behind me. The best thing now would be to stop looking over my shoulder. It was time to forget the past and look to the present and future. As the hours passed, movement returned. It came to my fingers first, which curled into fists, then slipped from my chest where they had been crossed by the undertaker. I flexed them several times, slowly, working the itches out of my palms. My eyes opened next, but that wasn't much good. Open or closed, it was all the same down here. Perfect darkness. The feelings brought pain. My back ached from where I'd fallen out of the window. My lungs and heart, having been out of the habit of beating, hurt. My legs were cramped, my neck was stiff. The only part of me which escaped the pain was my big right toe. It was when I started breathing that I began to worry about the air in the coffin. Mr. Crepsley had said I could survive for up to a week in my coma-like state. I didn't need to eat or use the toilet or breathe. But now that my breath was back, I became aware of the small amount of air and how quickly I was using it up. I didn't panic. Panic would make me gasp and use more air. I remained calm and breathed softly. Lay as still as I could. Movement makes you breathe more. I had no way of knowing the time. I tried counting inside my head but kept losing track of the numbers and having to go back and start over. I sang silent songs to myself and told stories beneath my breath. I wish they'd buried me with a TV or a radio, but I guess there's not much call for such items among the dead. Finally, after what seemed like several centuries stacked on one top of the other, the sound of digging reached my ears. He dug quicker than any human, so fast he wasn't digging at all, but rather sucking the soil out. He reached me in what had been a record time, less than a quarter of an hour. As far as I was concerned, it wasn't a moment too soon. He knocked 3 times on the coffin lid, then started unscrewing it. It took a couple of minutes, then he threw the lid wide open and I found myself staring up at the most beautiful night sky I'd ever seen. I took a deep breath and sat up coughing. It was a fairly dark night, and after spending so much time underground, it seemed bright as day to me. "Are you all right?" Mr. Cripsley asked. "I feel dead tired," I grinned weakly. He smiled at the joke. "Stand up so I can examine you," he said. I winced as I stood. I had pins and needles all over. He ran his fingers lightly up my back and then over my front. "You were lucky," he said. "No broken bones, just a bit of bruising, which will die down after a couple of days." He pulled himself out of the grave and reached down and gave me a hand up. I was still pretty stiff and sore. "I feel like a pincushion that's been squashed," I complained. "It will take a few days for the after effects to pass," he said. "But do not worry, you're in good shape. We are lucky they buried you today. If they'd waited another day to put you under, you'd be feeling much worse." He hopped back into the grave and closed the coffin lid. When he emerged, he picked up his shovel and began tossing the earth back in. "Do you want me to help?" I asked. "No," he said. "You would slow me down. Go for a stroll and walk some of that stiffness out of your bones. I will call when I'm ready to move on." "Did you bring my bag?" I asked. He nodded at a nearby headstone, from which the bag was hanging. I got to the bag and checked to see if he'd searched it. There was no sign of his having invaded my privacy, but I couldn't tell for sure. I'd just have to take him at his word. Anyway, it didn't matter much. There was nothing in my diary he didn't already know. I went for a walk among the graves, testing my limbs, shaking my legs and arms, enjoying it. Any feeling, even pins and needles, were better than none at all. My eyes were stronger than ever before, and I was able to read names and dates on headstones from several metres away. It was the vampire blood in me. After all, didn't vampires spend their whole lives in the dark? I knew I was only a half vampire, but all the... Suddenly, as I was thinking about my new powers, a hand reached out from behind one of the graves, wrapped itself around my mouth, and then dragged me to the ground and out of sight of Mr. Crepsley. I shook my head and opened my mouth to scream, but then saw something that stopped me dead in my tracks. My attacker, whoever he was, had a hammer and a large wooden stake, the tip of which was pointing directly at my heart.
Thank you for listening. And tune in shortly for the next exciting instalment of Cirque du Freak. Well, thank you from the English teachers and other staff members from Courtfield School. The music, Sneaky Snitch by Kevin MacLeod, is provided by incomputech.filmmusic.io. Licensed by creativecommons.org.